Welcome to the Wealth Done Differently Retirement Podcast. Danielle Howard, a certified financial planner, shares insight into the financial tools, techniques, and temperaments needed to make the most of your retirement dollars and relationships. Danielle bridges the gap between Wall Street and Main Street, bringing complex financial topics down to earth. Danielle will educate and inspire you as you define and refine your version of prosperity.
Hello and welcome to podcast episode number 2 with Danielle Howard. This is a great opportunity for Danielle to walk us through just who she is philosophically and really what she believes as a financial services professional. And our podcast title today is Down to Earth. And Danielle, you're having me ask some very specific questions that a lot of people would overlook as questions that would be important. Do you mind, before we dive into the questions, for you to tell me where these questions came from and why they're so important?
Well, I've written a book on the topic, Your Financial Revolution, Time to Recognize, Revitalize, and Release Your Financial Power. I think people are ready to start looking at their money differently. And especially as people move towards their retirement or rewirement years, the context needs to change with money, because you don't have as much time to make mistakes or recover from challenges that life throws at us. So my goal with talking about money from a slightly different context is to help people reconnect with what really is their idea of prosperity, what is their vision of true wealth, and how to use their financial resources to be the wind beneath their wings.
The foundation of all of this is what money is exactly. And that's the first question. I can't wait to hear your response.
Money. Yeah, people think of money in different ways, and many times it's that green stuff. But we know it's changing. Now it's a push of a button, because it's an exchange, and it's an exchange of value. We can look at it as money is what money does, which is a quote from Sir John Hicks, but that sounds so old and so broad. I appreciate the definition that Lynn Twist referred to money in her book, The Soul of Money, as a flow of our intentions. And that may for some sound a little ethereal or unearthly, but when you look at it, it really is. It is a flow of what is important to us. It is an exchange. It is a way of expressing ourselves, whether it is how we bring money into our lives with what we do to earn a living, or how we receive money. It could be from Social Security, or it could be from a trust account, and how we deal with it, how we feel about it, how we use it, how we give it away, how we spend it. It's a flow of what's important to us. It is a medium of an exchange. What does money mean to you, Matt?
Well, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head with a lot of those things. And I think that how we define money really affects how we interact with that flow, right? I always thought it was something that allows you to gain more freedom, right? So, but that's not always true, Danielle, right? I mean, sometimes when you have lots and lots of money, you actually have even more restrictions on your life. So one of the reasons why I'm so excited about podcasting with you is I know you're going to challenge not just my feelings surrounding money, wealth, retirement planning, and really this whole idea of the financial revolution, but you're going to be challenging the listeners too. So I love that. I think that's fantastic. And you say that there are three major financial hurdles that people have to go through, and this is all connected. So do you mind answering that? What are those three financial hurdles?
Well, it's not what you think. Many people just go with the context of what the world is telling them. When I ask people that question, I hear things, well, I need to get to retirement, or I need to get out of debt, or I should create a budget. And that's very surface. It's very tangible. Those might be things that you can put a quantitative number to, and they're still important, and there's still things that we need to deal with. But to me, we have to look at the financial hurdles as residing much deeper. They're much more profound, and they're even more challenging to overcome than those ones mentioned above. So people can be, maybe a little challenged with that thought that, wow, it's more than saving for retirement. But I really feel if we can connect with these hurdles, that it will be much more effectual in creating financial health in our lives. The first one is discontent. When you think about being discontent with your money, does that resonate with you a little bit?
Absolutely.
I think we all wrestle with a variety of things around discontentment. It may be about inequality. That's a big one in the news nowadays. And we have to take a look that there will always be people that have more, and there will always be others that have less than us. What does that mean to us? And how do we talk about it? How do we process that? We may have discontent about how we receive money, whether that is through a job position. Are we happy with it or unhappy? It may be our feelings around guilt if we have received an inheritance or are getting money from a trust fund. So looking at how money comes into our lives, there may be discontentment around how much joy we get out of it. We know that money can only buy happiness up to a certain point. And how do we wrestle with that aspect? We may have discontentment around our financial personalities, which is a whole nother podcast in and of itself. How we were raised around money, or maybe our life experiences, things that we've encountered. But that idea of discontentment around our financial decisions, our choices, our life worldview is something that we really need to address and deal with.
Okay.
Next, we have discomfort. Is it challenging to talk about money? I think so. And, we look at taboo topics around what are the big taboo topics out there? And it's usually sex and money. I have been working in this industry for over 22 years, and I will have couples come in, and this may be the first time that they have talked about money together. And I think that that is something that we really need to address, is our discomfort around that. And in so many ways, our identity is tied to money. It's about what we do for a living, or what type of car we own, or what type of phone we use. And I think that there is some discomfort in separating our net worth from our self-worth. And we need to peel that apart, and we need to understand that they are separate. Are we willing to be vulnerable and talk about these types of things? It's one of the things that I'm willing to do through these podcasts, is I'll be sharing some of my stories and some of the challenges that I've had in wrestling with this discomfort around who we are with money.
Well,
the third piece.
I'm sorry. Hold on. I want to just highlight just a couple of things there that I don't know if you might have heard, but I think you made my head explode there for a minute. The whole idea of net worth versus self-worth, and we are going to talk about that on later podcasts. And I just wanted to highlight that because, I kind of know the direction that you're going here. And you started with discontent, and then you moved to discomfort. Is the third one a diss too?
Let's stick with that. Sure. let's look at distrust.
Ah, okay. Okay.
How many times... I think our industry in itself, let's look at the financial services industry, and we have a lot of ugliness out there. When I talk to people and people go, well, what should I be looking for in a financial advisor? Or you listen to maybe other podcasts or you've read something, and they say, find somebody you can trust. How do you do that when it's hard enough for us to trust maybe even the people in our own household? I think we've all maybe kept a money secret from somebody close to us. Maybe a small purchase, or I've even heard of people having, you know, private bank accounts or money stashed places where other people don't know about it. And I think that whole idea of learning how to trust each other, whether it's in our intimate family relationships with maybe spouses, it may be children, it may be parents, but how do we move through that idea of financial distrust? And the financial services industry is just rift with it. You know, I don't think anybody trusts the government. I don't even think anybody really trusts the financial services industry. I think a lot of people wrestle with how do we purchase products that meet our expectations, or who do we trust when we're making an online purchase? So there's a lot of distrust around financial choices and products and services and, you know, even conversations within our own households that I think is a huge hurdle that we need to overcome.
So those three financial hurdles: discomfort, discontent, and distrust. Now, again, all of this flows into your big picture philosophy on people's relationships with money, and not just that, the kind of conversations you need to have with your financial services professional. And I have heard a lot of people talk about financial health. I'm excited to hear how you define that.
What I mean by financial health is taking a look at those three hurdles and realizing that they're not numbers in nature. They're more subdued. They're more internal. And then with financial health, we need to define it for ourselves. I like to compare it a lot of times. I love using analogies, and you'll hear me talking about nature a lot, but I also use the analogy of our physical health. And this is a good one to compare financial health and physical health. We know that if we have food in the refrigerator, that doesn't mean we're eating healthy for our own personal body types. There's a lot of research out there that shows, you know, some people need a certain type of diet, and there's not one perfect fit for anyone out there. So just having money in the bank or investments in a 401k or having a life insurance policy doesn't mean that you are financially healthy. If you have access to a gym, do you know how to use that equipment to best accomplish your goals? It's the same with your financial tools that you may be using. Do you know how to use them as your life is changing? I know that I can't use the, you know, the tools at the gym, the equipment at the gym, in the same way at my current age as I did when I was 20 years younger. So, things need to change. And our financial choices need to change. Our financial tools need to change in order to help us accomplish our goals, especially as we move towards that retirement years, those retirement, looking at retirement in a different context than we maybe previously have. I don't think that financial health is a destination. It's a journey. It's about making intentional financial decisions and strategic changes all along the way. So if you look at your physical life and you look at what are you doing differently now than what you did 10 years ago, you know that changes need to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with our financial health.
You also talk about financial seasons. So as this is an entirely fluid process, what are the personal financial seasons?
We're going to talk a lot about seasons in this podcast. And again, my goal is to help people understand money in a little bit different way. I get to live in beautiful Rocky Mountains, Colorado. And as we discussed earlier, I've got a river running right outside my door. So I get to see the distinct changes in seasons around here. We've got spring, summer, winter, fall. And I love the idea of comparing not only our personal life seasons, but, you know, what does it look like to imbue that with a economic season? And what does it look like to take a look at the financial season? So let's define it a little bit more. We know that there's a continuum, that we're fortunate to experience spring, summer, winter, fall over and over and over again throughout our lives. And our first distinction is knowing that life season is there's a finite beginning, you know, starting at birth and ending in death. So if we were to look at it, you know, compare that to the seasons, we would say a life season, we start with spring, birth, new life, and we end with death, winter. And there is a opportunity to bloom and grow and flourish, and then it winds down. So that's the, you know, the beginning and end to our life. We also can look at financial seasons, and these are continuums. This is cyclical throughout life. Let me give you an example. So my husband rewired when he was 55 years old. He left a career in the financial services world, and we really drilled down on what brought meaning to his life and how do we look at living a life without regrets. And we went through a process of opening that door to what was truly important to him, and he started a new career in teaching. So he entered a new season in his life at what people would consider a fall life season. He's in the fall of his life. He's 55 years old, but he is blooming all over again. We looked at how he wanted to invest in himself, how to go back to school, how he was going to cultivate that new ground as he got his teaching credentials and started this new career. That to me is exciting to walk people through the financial context of that. What does it mean? You know, the financial services world and basically our culture in general says, oh, you're supposed to retire. You're supposed to draw a line in the sand, hop over into the fall season of life and withdraw, retire, pull back. And I say, yeah, no, not so much. Let's look at it a little bit differently. My husband, Mark, had a 10-year season of growth in this teaching dynamic. He taught high school. He was very engaged. It was a wonderful opportunity for him. We had to make some really big financial choices for him to be able to do that. So for him to enter this new growth season in his personal life, we had to take a look at maybe where we could harvest some financial resources. We had to look at what was going to happen to our income in order to pay for his schooling and to create an income stream for ourselves while he was in school. You know, so many of us take a look at what's going to change throughout life. So knowing that these seasons are a little bit different, people out there, you know, you may have to harvest some of your financial resources in order to, you know, have a wedding or send a child to college or to make that big purchase or a business venture down the road. And you want to harvest from appropriate tools. It may be from investment accounts or life insurance cash values. So are you seeing kind of the picture I'm trying to paint that you may experience different financial seasons within life seasons? And it isn't all, you know, it's different for every single person out there. And that's what's exciting about this world I get to work in.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're painting a very, very clear picture here.
Okay. Let me paint you another one. How about a financial winter? So a financial winter would be something like a divorce or a death of a loved one. It has, the emotional impact, the emotional winter of that is really difficult. I've experienced those. But there's also huge financial implications. And when I went through a divorce at 28 and had a one-year-old baby, I was in the spring of my life. I was getting ready to just bloom and grow and do all these things. And yet here I got hit upside life with a unexpected event. And we had to deal with the financial implications of that. I think for a lot of people, we experience those winters in life seasons that, you know, it's a lot of times it's very unexpected and very painful. You know, the average woman out there, they say his widowhood is 57, and that's mind-boggling to me. And these ladies, you know, you need to look at how you're going to create an income stream and where is that going to come from. So you may be entering the fall season of your life, but all of a sudden you experience a financial winter and you need to make decisions about how to take money, if you want to take money out of a deceased spouse 401k, or should you roll it over into your own? How do you deal with Social Security, with widow benefits? So there's a lot of moving, complicated parts that you can't look at just in a vacuum, and they need to be looked at together. And you just need to understand that a life season is going to have different financial seasons inside of it.
That makes a lot of sense. You also talk about life principles. And I love how all of this just seems to seamlessly fit in together. So your feelings about money, the three financial hurdles, which are discontent, discomfort, and distrust, talking about what financial health means, and then going through those seasons. And I like that it's not necessarily linear, right? As you were just talking about with your husband, right? There's other opportunities where spring can happen, and you should be open to that spring, or actually any of the seasons. There should be a level of receptivity there. But now you talk about the six life principles. Help us understand, because this is very foundational, right? Let's talk about the six financial principles, or the six life principles. I'm sorry.
All right. The first one is, I think we all want to have some control in your life. I'm an oldest child. I'm that type A personality. I can tend to be a control freak. Look what kind of industry I'm in, what I've chosen for a life career. But there's so little within our control. I think looking at what is truly within our control and where it circumvents with what is truly important and how we can focus on those pieces, we spend a lot of time and energy talking about or focusing on or getting upset about or worrying about the things that are outside of our control. And that's a lot of wasted time and energy as far as I'm concerned. One of the things that I've worked on very intentionally and diligently over time is to look at how I want to spend my time, my energy, my financial resources, to focus on the things and to fully embrace what is within my control, and understanding that there's so little, we have so little control. We don't have control over what the markets are going to do, but we can control how we are asset allocated, or we can control our diversification, or we can control, you know, looking at our tax returns and deciding, can we be more optimal in how we're taking money or being efficient with income streams or how we're protecting our financial resources, and how those things that are within our control support us in what is truly important in our life. I think we need to address what is within our control, and we need to make intentional choices about what we do with that control. Another piece is the idea of divine timing. You know, there's a lot of get rich quick schemes out there. There is a lot of, oh my gosh, price to earnings ratios are so high, and how should I deal with our current economic environment? We know that we want to embrace the financial seasons, the life seasons, the economic seasons, and we know that those are all going to meld together for our benefit if we're aware of them. So I think it's important that we understand that there's divine timing out there. The seasons are going to happen no matter what. And that we don't want to fall into, whether it's a get-rich-quick scheme or looking at, I see it a lot when people are aging and they're hitting that 55 and they're going, oh my gosh, I need to make up all this ground because I didn't prepare. So they try to get they put all their money into equity environments that they're taking on too much risk for what is important to them. And I think if we understand that there is a divine timing out there and that there is no such thing as get rich quick, and that we plan and prepare and embrace that, that it will serve us well. Next one is giving is foundational. Many people think, well, I'll just give if there's something left over to give. And in scripture, we've heard it is better to give than to receive. There is something to be had when we understand the power of giving and that giving is foundational to what a healthy financial life is all about. When we can find, whether it's the nonprofits or the organizations or the people that we want to have a flow of our financial resources, just a piece of it go to, and that we get a sense of, you know, if we're able to give just a little bit and start somewhere, it starts coming back to us. And we want to know where our hearts are at and what's important to us. But that giving is foundational, and it's such, it not only makes you feel good, there's all sorts of scientific evidence that giving does, it releases endorphins, it makes you feel good. And that if we can start doing that more as just a foundational piece of who we are, that will build our financial health in the long run. We also want to embrace the idea of we want to grow. We want to continue to grow. And knowing that growing is not only financially, but we want to grow in our personal life and our relationships. We want to grow intellectually. We want to grow our financial assets. Again, as we look at what changes when we move into the rewirement season of life, many people think it's, oh, let's just draw the line in the sand and take money out of our accounts, and it's not really important to grow it anymore. I think we do. I think we need to continue to grow our assets. But I think it's important that we need to understand why, that people, you need to define your why for wanting to continue to grow, especially your financial assets. If it's only about, oh, I'm just, you know, I want bigger barns, I want to buy a bigger house, that is ultimately going to leave us a little, you know, discontent, discomfort. We'll embrace, you know, we'll end up facing those hurdles again. So you want to define your why. You want to look at why is it important for you to keep growing, to keep intellectually growing, to learn something new every day. The financial markets change. The ways you invest change. The old idea of when you retire and you don't tap into principal and you just cut coupons from your bond portfolio because you're only going to be alive for 10 more years, that doesn't exist anymore. We're in a whole new world of not only investing, but how long we're going to live. It may be 30 years. And understanding what needs to continue to grow in that new life season that you're in is so important. I really appreciate my parents in this regard. My dad is about, he'll be 85 this fall. My mom is a few years behind, but my dad continues to learn new aspects of his investment software. And my mom is still teaching water aerobics and needs to remain certified at a beautiful young age of 79. So they've set that lovely example for me of how you continue to grow even in the fall season of your life. Another principle that I think is really important for everybody to understand is that we need to use our resources wisely. It's getting harder and harder. I live in the Rocky Mountains and in the West, where water is a huge resource that is always looked at as something that right now we're in a spring where we didn't get much water. We didn't get much moisture this winter. Our snowpack was much way below average, and we need to conserve water. And I think if we look at our financial choices as our resources, and even looking at our investments, and when we, you know, that unfortunately we create chaos and suffering in economies where we're wasteful or where we hoard access or we celebrate excess, I think it's important that people look at what does it mean for me to use my financial resources wisely as I determine how much is enough for myself, as I determine how I want to invest, how I want to grow. That if we can use our resources wisely, that we will still have a thriving economy, that we can still, you know, discern between our needs and our desires and, you know, use things and have enough for ourselves and share what we have with others, and that we can create a beauty in our lives. The final principle that I truly appreciate is that idea of interconnectedness. Edward Lawrence is an American mathematician, and he's a pioneer in what they call chaos theory, which is way beyond the scope of my bandwidth. But what they talk about, what he talks about, is the idea of the butterfly effect, and that each choice we make is a small change, and that it has a effect on something down the road. And this is where we really need to start taking a look at taking our financial power back. I think one of the challenges that we have nowadays is that we've gotten so disconnected with our financial choices because we can push a button or swipe a card, and we are losing that intentionality, and we're losing the idea that, wow, when I make this choice, what is the impact on somebody else? If I go into a coffee shop and the only reason is for me to get a cup of coffee, and I don't think it through just a little bit more and go, you know, I am supporting these baristas that are in here, and not only am I giving in exchange for something that is important for me this morning, but I, you know, am helping them earn a living. You know, or do I not want to spend money on a cup of coffee? Because if I put that $5 or $6 away, I guess that's a latte, not a cup of coffee. But if I were to put that $6 away and set it aside for my future use and have some compounding interest on that, that, you know, people can go out there and you can look at what the latte habit is over time, that, you know, consistently saving, you're going to be able to build up a nest egg for buying coffee down the road. What is the impact on your family of the financial choices you make? What is the impact of the investments you make on companies that are hiring people around the world and what kind of a work environment they have? But I think we need to claim our financial power back. We need to understand that each one of us is an important part of the whole, and that our everyday choices make, they've got an impact on people, whether it's the barista at the coffee shop or the person that is an employee of a company halfway around the world.
I love you talking about claiming your financial power back. And we do have a lot more power, not only to support the things, as you had just said, that we might want to support. But a lot of times it sounds to me like really taking a perspective on supporting yourself is also vitally important. So Danielle, you have just scratched the surface of what really the next year's worth of podcasts are going to be about.
Yes, sir.
So I'm going to take just a quick high level a recap. So For those of you who might be driving and listening to the podcast, make sure that you take a moment and just, you know, hit the back button and listen to this one more time, because there are so many layers. What Danielle did today was she just kept peeling the onion and peeling it and peeling it until we really got to that one statement, that this whole idea of her book, Your Financial Revolution, which you can get a copy of, but really claiming your financial power back is a huge component of what we're going to be talking about on these podcasts. Any kind of closing thoughts here, Danielle, before we kind of wrap it up today?
Well, I just want to encourage our listeners in several regards. One, you're not alone. And that's what's exciting to me about doing these podcasts, about starting to look at having different conversations around money, that we all struggle with this stuff. And if we can start having conversations about what financial hurdles we want to jump over to address, and being willing to being a little bit vulnerable and sharing a part of yourself with somebody close to you, how are you going to build up that trusted network? And I think as we become more vulnerable, as we start being willing to talk about more than just, oh my gosh, you know, what kind of rate of return did I get in 2017? It was a fantastic year. Great. But it's so much more than that. So let's take a look at how can we start cultivating the conversations? What of the one financial hurdles that discontent, distrust, and what was the other one?
Discomfort.
Discomfort, sorry. Do you want to talk about with somebody? Yeah, how do you want to start broaching that subject? And the other one I'd like for you to take away today is your why. Why do you want to have financial health in your life? What does financial health look like to you? And let's just have that conversation with somebody and dip your toe in the water of what it would look like to start doing our money differently.
And something that I would like for everybody to do is to make sure that they click the subscribe now button right below this podcast. In the podcast narrative, our summary, there will be links to Danielle's website, a way for you to get a copy of the book that we're going to be talking about here for the next probably year on these podcasts. But also share this podcast with somebody who you know needs to have this conversation, somebody who you know needs to at least think about money and their relationship to money in a different way so that they can really claim that financial power back. So for Danielle Howard, this is Matt Halloran, and we will see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Done Differently Retirement Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Wealth by Design, LLC. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Danielle Howard, Certified Financial Planner, is an investment advisor representative of Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Cambridge and Wealth by Design, LLC are not affiliated.